This NPR station.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhart. And you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. Well, it's that time of the year, Mary, and we have a busy show, three guests, and some very useful and interesting information. So,
well, and I'm also hoping they were listening to Amy Goodman before us, particularly about the Green New Deal. I thought AOC was really at her best, really defending when to call it elitist. And she's making such an important point, and I think you really want to remember this, because you're always going to hear about all the money with the Green New Deal. And she makes a really important point that you better believe we're going to be spending that and more. It's just a matter of how we're going to do it. Do we want to react? Or do we want to try and be proactive and try and prevent a lot of it? Anyway, she makes some fabulous points, but that is not our interest right now. That Arlene is absolutely right. There are so many things happening in our area right now, and I am really excited because just in a very few minutes, we're going to be talking to Erin Carmone, and she is one of the co-authors of, yes, I know most of you know, the notorious one, the notorious RBG. And very shortly, April 14th is going to be a very special event for Planned Parenthood of Southwest and Central Florida, because Erin Carmone is going to be the main featured speaker, and that's really going to be a major fundraiser for Planned Parenthood, and it should be really delightful. So she's going to give us some tidbits about what's happening, and then and after that we are going to hear, actually, it just gets so busy around this time of year. You know, it's always Women's History Month and getting into April, and we're getting into Earth Day and Easter and all that kind of stuff. But really, one of my very favorite events is Through Women's Eyes, the UN Women's Through Women's Eyes Film Festival. And it's women directors, it's for and about women, just fabulous films, just fabulous stocks. And they're not all documentaries now. And I think they have like 20 features and I don't know how many shorts. And some of the shorts are absolutely outstanding. And I think it's really good. It's part of the overall Sarasota Film Festival. And so the Sarasota Film Festival starts next Friday, April 5th. Through Women's Eyes is part of it. And it's the 6th and the 7th. And so we're going to be talking with one of the directors of a film that actually is pretty local, Fly Like a Girl, and it's just a fabulous film, and I think you would really enjoy watching it, and particularly, I want you to take your young daughters to see that film, because they will be truly inspired. And then I was also really lucky, because you're going to have to make choices next weekend, because here we're lucky again. We're going to have the women's four, the final four of the NCAA basketball.
March Madness.
And I'm telling you, it is a toss-up, even if Connecticut, yes, you heard me, if Connecticut's going to make the final four and is impossible and improbable, and Flea, don't hold it against me, I'm only using the statistics, but I don't care who wins. I just want the best teams to be here. And it's going to be fabulous basketball, but it's going to be so much fun. They've got so many events planned for kids. They have Tourney Town, and Clara Lessinger will be updating us on that. And actually, for those of you who are interested in maybe scoring a free ticket, that they need volunteers, and there are all kinds of things you can volunteer for, so stay tuned for that, and you might luck out to become a volunteer and maybe score a ticket. So anyway, and I'm looking at the clock, and so I better put this music on. We're trying to make a better world here, and we will come back with Erin Carmone.
Skill without a long, don't count.
jotting this down because I am so excited with me on the phone right now. And I know so many of you are going to recognize this name immediately. Erin Carmone, and she is the co-author of the notorious one, RBG. And luckily for all of us, she is going to be coming to our area for a really important fundraiser for Planned Parenthood for Southwest and Central Florida. It's going to be April 14th, 11:30 to 1:30. So, Erin Carmone, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me, do you ever get tired of talking about the book? I mean, I think it's a fabulous book, but do you ever get tired of talking about it?
You know, I don't. I think it's a privilege to be able to be part of telling Justice Ginsburg's story. She's contributed so much to the culture, to the law, to our history, to our present. And there's so many different aspects of her life that people are interested in. Not to mention the fact that the Supreme Court is, you know, still sitting and she's still one of the nine. So there is a continued relevance to telling her story, both past, present, and future.
Well, did you notice that in honor of RBG and also Women's History Month, that I think it's Samuel Adams has made a special brew that I think they're going to have an opening tomorrow in Jamaica, Queens, and it's called When There Are Nine, when she's always asked, you know, when will she think there are enough women on the court, and when she says, when there are nine. And are you going to try and make that event?
I'm not going to be at that event. I think if I were to attend every event that celebrates Justice Ginsburg, it would be the only thing that I would do. But I'm amused by it. I'm charmed by it. I mean, we're talking about there are tattoos of Justice Ginsburg's face on people's bodies. There are, you know, people are painting her face on their nails. People want to show the love for the justice. And I think that's great. I think any way they want to show it, especially if it contributes to awareness of women's rights and of the Supreme Court, I think that's fantastic.
Well, you know, it was kind of a perfect storm, if you will, because here Ruth Bader Ginsburg, essentially long before she got in the Supreme Court, really gave the whole basis for the women's rights movement, you might say, really. And there she's fighting these cases in the court, she wins 5 out of 6. But when she's on the Supreme Court, I think it was really interesting that when that absolutely horrible decision came down, Shelby County, you know, versus Holder, that it was almost like that was the perfect storm when people really, you know, the common person really kind of became aware of this tough, smart, really audacious thinker, courageous on the Supreme Court. And I think that your book then, it's kind of contributed to us all being aware of such a phenomenal woman who should be known.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. I mean, you know, but I don't think that even Justice Ginsburg would take credit for the entire women's movement. I mean,
the word movement,
you know, really implies that everybody steps up to the plate. And I think as extraordinary as she is and as incredible as it is to hear about her life and the work that she continues to do, I think it's incumbent on all of us to participate in the ways that we can. And so I think, you know, one of the things that Justice Ginsburg was doing when she put on her dissent collar in that voting rights case, Shelby County versus Holder, which is the one that inspired my co-author, Shauna, to dub her the notorious RBG, she was asking the world to listen. And she was asking all of us to be aware of what the Supreme Court was doing to curtail voting rights. And in many other aspects of life, whether it's reproductive freedom or civil rights, access to the ballot was a very important one, money in politics, she's really been using her voice in the role that she has. And I think what she's doing is she's asking all of us to pay attention and to participate in our own ways.
Yeah, but sometimes you do. You know, this is a country that hopefully, and I hope it maintains that, is based on law and respect for the Constitution. And sometimes the expression and literally the understanding of that law is critical. And so, but you're absolutely right. She's always really impressed that she is a team. She's part of a team. But I think one of the things you really appreciate about her is that she took so many of the events of her life, which being, you know, that she's her age now, that she really has suffered an awful lot of things that women, unfortunately, in many cases, still are suffering. And following her mother's advice, she didn't get angry. She really did something about it.
Yes, that's right. And one of the things that was so exciting about working on Notorious RBG, the book, is learning the story of her life and how, you know, actually for the first 35 years of her life, she experienced a lot of discrimination, but she was not an activist. She did not publicly identify as a feminist. It was only when the women's movement kind of rose up in the late 60s and the early 70s that she looked back and realized she'd experienced what we would now call pay discrimination. She'd experienced pregnancy discrimination. She'd been denied all kinds of opportunities on the basis of her gender. You know, she graduated tied for first in her class from Columbia Law School, and nobody would hire her. And she's always said that there were three strikes against her. She was a woman, she was a mother, and she was a Jew. But in the 10 years that she was the co-founder and a litigator of the ACLU Women's Rights Project, she actually systematically went ahead with doing something about it. And case by case, methodically, incrementally, she took a situation in which the Supreme Court had never struck down a law because it discriminated against women, to the Supreme Court saying, actually, that kind of discrimination is unconstitutional and violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. So, I think, like so many people, she got to a point where she read the experiences of her life and realized that it was not just her, right? We all live our individual experiences, but I think she also realized that these were all occurring in a system that told women that they had different roles, subordinate roles, and told them that it was a favor. And she realized that she could use the law as one of many tools to make a more equal and a more just world.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting because, as she has said, that actually all the years she spent with the ACLU would probably be a real factor if she were being nominated to be a Supreme Court justice now, and perhaps would keep it off, it might keep her off the court. And tell me, because, you know, she fought so hard and she really saw the achievements she made with her fellow colleagues. She really taught them about discrimination to the point that they actually really understood it. And they acted on it, but now it's almost like boom. You know, I'm sorry, but with Gorsuch and with Kavanaugh, and now, you know, the mighty Heritage Society, you might say, the Federalists, that it is such a different court. And yeah. And you know, I think it's one of the reasons that now she started to read some of her dissents out loud, you know, really impressing how powerful this is. And so tell me, you know, because it almost requires a different kind of battle. And do you pick up from Justice Ginsburg any fury at kind of what's happened to our Supreme Court? And do you see any difference in her tactics in dissent, et cetera?
Well, I think that Justice Ginsburg really cares about the Supreme Court as an institution, and she wants that institution to be fair and to have integrity and to have a neutral process, even knowing that justices have different views on what the Constitution means and whose views matter and how to read these events. People have different values. But I would say that even before Gorsuch and Kavanaugh joined the court, we had Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Alito, who within just a couple of years reversed recent precedents, like in an abortion case, and also undermined, and also in a, you know, John Roberts in particular, in cases involving remedies to racial discrimination, really just took a huge turn to the right. So it started really under the Bush administration, and that's when she became the notorious RBG. For many years, she had been considered a kind of consensus-seeking moderate, and I think that her instinct is she wants to do the most good whenever possible. But I think in recent years, we've seen her be a lot more outspoken and dissent a lot more because of the court's changing. So she's changed in response to the court changing. Now, there was this beautiful moment in 2016 where Justice Ginsburg didn't really pull out the dissent collar because Justice Kennedy, for example, struck down a major abortion law, kept intact the Fair Housing Act, kept intact basically affirmative action. But now that Justice Kennedy has been replaced by Justice Kavanaugh and Gorsuch has replaced Scalia, I think we are likely to see her pull out that dissent collar once more. And I think it's likely to be even more uncharted territory because President Trump has absolutely transformed the federal judiciary from the bottom up at every level of the federal courts now. Very young Trump appointees with lifetime appointments are going to have the power to judge laws that the Supreme Court might never hear. And so we are in a place that is much more stark than I think Justice Ginsburg could ever have imagined. And I think, you know, as I hope she lives forever, but she's 86 years old. So it's incumbent on voters who care about this stuff to make sure, you know, without a Democratic Senate and without a Democratic president, there will not be justices like RBG on the court.
Yeah, right now we're looking, and even though the Trump and Republicans have tried to defeat the Affordable Care Act in every imaginable way, now they're going to go right straight to the courts, and this really has been a plan of Mitch McConnell and the Republicans and the Heritage Society and the Federalists to pack the courts, I mean, federal levels, and they are accomplishing it and practically have, and it's really very, very frightening, and thank God for RBG, and Bean, you brought that up. I imagine you're asked all the time, how is her health?
Well, look, she is actually back going to the opera. She's been spotted at the opera where she never misses an opening night. I saw her myself back on the Supreme Court bench. She's doing great. The challenges to her health are significant. She is an 86-year-old woman. She has had 3 brushes with cancer. She did fracture ribs on a couple of different occasions, including in December. But she has every intention of seeing this fight through. She is doing everything she can, including working out with her trainer, to make sure that she's up to the task. And mentally, she's as sharp as she ever was.
And one of the most valuable things in your book is the workout of RBG. That's the beauty of this book. You've got everything from the decisions, and I really love the fact that you did the red markings on the side, kind of the way RBG would correct, her clerk's presentations. But that workout is fabulous. So, Erin, I'm looking at the time, and you've been very gracious. I know you're under a very tight schedule, and we will really look forward. Are you going to give far more tidbits about RBG when you come down here and are part of it?
I'm going to tell some of my favorite RBG stories, and I hope everybody will come out and support Planned Parenthood.
Oh, thank you so much, and we will really appreciate your coming. So you take care, and thanks so much for giving us this time today.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. And again, that's Erin Carmen, and she's one of the co-writers of the notorious RBG. And I thought we would go out, actually, with, RBG, as Gloria Steinem says, is kind of a superhero. She's really a cult figure, almost. But I could not resist putting this on, this song, RBG Juicy. So let's give a listen to this.
Yeah. This song is dedicated to all the judges that told me I never amount to nothing because of my gender. To all the people that lived in their ivory towers that I was hustling in front of, that tried to buy me off by putting Susan B. Anthony on the dollar. Yeah. And all the women in the struggle. Know what I'm saying? It was all a dream back when I argued Reed v. Reed. Then once they put Sandy D up in the dub DC, Janet Reno made the call. When Slick Willie chose me to sit, and now that I've been installed, I rock the black robe with my jabot, sipping tea while reading Amici Tales of Woe. Way back when I caught a lot of flack, I held back. Now look where I'm at. Remember Frankfurter? Da-ha, da-ha. He never thought a woman could go this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I decide right. Quarters move right, but my dissents get sights. Born sinner, but definitely a winner. Defending women's rights cause unlike them, I'd been her. Peace to Willie, Jimmy C, and guess who? Irwin Griswold, the ACLU. I'm blowing up a glass ceiling for good. Call the chamber, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, Nino.
You've been fighting for equal rights from Kiki to RBG. You've reached those heights. You always fight for equal justice. A diva in our eyes. Originalists can't touch this.
I made the change from a Cambridge dame to up close and personal with a New York game. CLS I teach, they don't just give tenure track away. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Southern District could not resist me, but firms, they dismiss me. Now they write petitions to assist me.
I never thought it could happen, this SCOTUS stuff. I was too used to that glass ceiling and such. Now I'm riding elephants with my boy Scalia. Next trip to India with Sasha and Malia. Pimped out my chambers, look so chic. Sold out seats to hear Bader G speak.
Grant and cert without fear. Only take cases we really want to hear. Lunches, brunches, life tenure, we cool. But considered a fool because I left Harvard Law School. Stereotypes of a lady misunderstood. But it's still all good.
It's all good.
And if you don't know, now you know, Nino.
Check it.
You've been fighting for equal rights from Kiki to RBG. You've reached those heights. You always fight for equal justice. A diva in our eyes. Originalists can't touch this.
Hedderand, Fisher, Ledbetter, Carhartt. When those guys are wrong, I'll step in and do my part. Shelby's messed up, but my girl's back. Meet up. Windsor and Perry, now we got gay nups.
VMI, what's up with that? Look like discrimination from where I sat.
That's right.
It's not intent, but effects. Arguing every day, getting Hillary's texts.
We don't need Mitt Romney's binders. Qualified ladies, check this bench, you'll find her. The time will come when I'll have to retire, but not so fast, this court's my empire.
When Bush v. Gore called the presidency, I called that an untested prophecy. Sandra Day left a better day, but that can't be the extent of our legacy.
Damn right I'm gonna speak my mind.
Cause if we can't move ahead, then we're behind, and it's all...
It's all good.
And if you don't know, now you know,
right,
Nino.
You've been fighting for equal rights from Kiki to RBG.
And if you don't know, now
you
know,
those heights. You always fight for equal justice. A diva in our eyes.
And if you don't know, now you know,
can't touch this.
Representing all the ladies on the bench. Supreme Court Justice.
Did you hear that, Nino? Ha ha. This is for you too, Sonia.
Oh, indeed. It's for all the women on the bench. Could not resist playing that. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater. This is Community Conscious Radio. And I want to call attention to this too, because we got all kinds of things happening here around MNF too.
Ike Riley, star of Tropical Heatwave and longtime WMNF favorite, is returning to Tampa and the Attic in Ybor City on March 28th. You don't want to miss the show opener at 8 p.m., Siobhan Philidor.
It's time to let go.
That's Ike Riley at the Attic in Ybor City, Thursday night, March 28th. Capacity is limited, so get your tickets now at WMNF.org.
Okay, and Siobhan's going to really be part of that, too. Okay, well, as I said, the film festival starts next week in Sarasota, particularly for the Through Women's Eyes, is going to be Saturday and Sunday. And this movie is going to be shown at 3:30 on Saturday, and it's going to be at the Regal Hollywood 11, I think, Auditorium 3. And so let's give a listen, because actually this is a Lakeland resident. We're going to be listening to Katie McIntyre Wyatt, and she's going to be talking about Fly Like a Girl. I am so happy to welcome to the show Katie McIntyre Wyatt, and she and her husband have put together just a phenomenal documentary, Fly Like a Girl, and it's going to be part of that UN Through Women's Eyes Festival that's coming up very soon down in Sarasota. It's going to be April 6th and April 7th, and it's going to be at the Regal Hollywood, or the Regal Auditorium 11. Oh, no, wait a minute. It's the Regal Hollywood, 11, and it's going to be Auditorium 3 at 3:30 on Saturday, and then it's going to be part of the larger Sarasota Film Festival, of which Through Women's Eyes is a part of. It's going to be shown again then on Monday, 4:30, April 8th, again at Regal Hollywood 11, but this time Auditorium 4. And so, Katie McIntyre Wyatt, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Fly Like a Girl. That was interesting how that phrase happened when we are watching in your marvelous film this fantastic aerobatic pilot who is a woman and became actually the first woman to win the national competition 3 years in a row, that she does this phenomenal demonstration where she comes in upside down, not very far from the ground, and goes through and clips this tape. And he said, "That's how you fly like a girl." I thought, "Wow!" I mean, that is the whole film. It is so impressive. And of course, I love flying, and I've always thought the astronauts and all that are just phenomenal. And I think you've done just a fabulous film. But to me, it's also so great that I really hope, particularly a lot of young women, young girls, see this film, because they can realize that if they're interested in men, they can do it too.
Yes, absolutely. And Patty Wagstaff, who you saw in that scene of the film Cutting the Ribbon, she was actually the inspiration for the title. I was at an air show a number of years ago and heard the announcer say that exact phrase, and that's how you fly like a girl. And it just really stuck with me and sort of became one of the tipping points to help make this film.
Well, you know, I was really thinking of you this morning when I was reading the paper, and they were disappointed because on the space station now that they were going to have this week, two astronauts, women astronauts, go out, and it would be the first time that two women would have been out there in a spacewalk at the same time to change the batteries, but they didn't have the right size spacesuits. They only have one. And so because of the size, they're not going to do it. But I thought, wow, I thought this could fit right into your film.
It could. You know, it's funny. There's a lot of stories like that where there's this anticipation of what will happen, and then one small thing, well, I guess it's not a small thing when it comes to spacesuits, but, you know, there's always another obstacle or barrier to overcome. But I think that the great thing about this is that they're even thinking about how to do that and being more purposeful about ensuring that there's more women involved in aerospace and aviation. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens next for sure, because I know that there's a lot of young women that are really motivated to become astronauts and be, you know, part of those first crews that'll explore Mars and all that. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more from women in the future.
Well, and again, we're talking to Katie McIntyre Wyatt, and her film, Fly Like, or documentary, their film, Fly Like a Girl, is going to be part of UN Through Women's Eyes Festival. And, you know, Katie, have you always been fascinated with flying? Why did you want to do this film?
Yeah, so it's funny. I grew up in Florida, and of course, you know, if you grew up in Florida, you remember the shuttle program and going to NASA on school field trips and experiencing all that. And I remember going to air shows as a young girl. My mom and dad would take me, but it never really occurred to me that aviation was something I could do. And it wasn't, my parents told me I could do anything I wanted to do, but it just didn't occur to me. I was definitely more inclined to arts, and film and television and that kind of stuff. And so I got involved in a high school of the arts in West Palm and was a film major there, and always knew that one day I wanted to make a documentary. And fast forward to several years later, I was a teacher and working in a public school in a fourth grade classroom, and really kept seeing a disconnect between the young girls in my room in STEM subjects. And all that combined with my desire to make a documentary and starting to sort of have an interest in learning more about women in aviation, both what they're doing now and their history, gave me the idea to do this documentary. And I am not an aviator myself. I'm not a pilot, but I am super passionate about the aviation world, all aspects of aviation, and love promoting the opportunities for young people, especially women and girls, to be involved in aviation. And it's kind of become a passion of mine through making this film.
Well, and I repeat, I'm hoping that young girls, their moms will make sure they get to see this film, because aviation, yes, in every way, I mean, in other words, there are so many possibilities of careers, but the women you have, I mean, they are absolutely amazing. And the thing I got from each one of them is that they so wanted to share their story, because so many of them were first. You know, and they realized they were the first, and they realized some of the things, and also that fabulous. Is she a Marine, fighter? Is she a fighter pilot? A Marine? That African American woman?
Yeah, Vernice Armour was actually the first African American female combat pilot in the United States, and she is retired from service now, and it has moved on to motivational speaking. But yes, she was incredible to interview and to talk to. Her story is unbelievable, and just one of those people that you could sit and talk to all day. And really, 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 her story connects across the board, not just with aviation, but just in pursuing your dreams and staying motivated.
Well, she was just amazing. And how she said when she first got introduced to, quote, aviation at all, she said, well, heck, I'm not interested in that because everybody knows black people don't fly. And then she found out, indeed, they did. And black women flew, even though Bessie Coleman had to go to France to become a citizen there because she would be allowed to fly there, get a pilot's license, but not here. But when she was telling that story in Iraq, when our soldiers were really pinned down and being picked off, and there she had only a couple missiles left, and so she made this very dangerous run, and she managed to hit the target. And then she saw this guy that actually had got injured in that battle with shrapnel. And he found out that she was the one that was piloting that plane that actually took the snipers out of that tower. I mean, that was gripping. I mean, it really was. Yeah. And she is such a strong woman. And matter of fact, you know, she doesn't make a big deal of it. Hey, I'm no hero. Anybody could do this. And we say, well, you are Wonder Woman personified. But I found that throughout the film, you had the same kind of people, or whether it was that fabulous Pakistani or Afghani refugee girl. She was terrified of flying. But then she overcame that and then flew around the world and has become a role model. I mean, it was just stunning. How did you find these people? And were they as cooperative as they seemed to be in the film, that they wanted to tell their story?
Oh, yes. Every single one of the women that we interviewed were amazing. They were all incredibly gracious with their time. This is the thing about women in aviation. And I think the aviation community as a whole is they love to tell their story. They love to try to get others involved in aviation. And they were all incredibly willing to share what they had been through. And we found them a number of different ways. Some of them were women that I had been following for quite some time and had really been inspired by. And then some of them were women who came to us through contacts with other women in aviation. It just was really neat once we put out there that we were making this film, the people who started calling us and connecting with us and saying, have you heard about this person, or have you talked to this woman, or have you considered including this person in the film? And the hardest part was deciding when do we stop? Because I could have gone on and made a 100-hour documentary and still wouldn't have even scratched the surface of all the wonderful things women are doing in the aviation and STEM world. So it was really neat for me to get to meet each of these women, to hear their story, to spend time with them, and just to see what motivates them. And it was really inspiring for me to talk to them and sit in the same room with them.
You know, just last week, we had a 91-year-old veteran that was in the show, and we were talking to her because she participated in this program, you know, where they take them to Washington to see the monument, et cetera. And she was extraordinary, and she was a Navy woman. And so I found this clip, and it was fascinating. It happened to be that a group of eight women, they're all flyers in the Navy, and the very first woman pilot that led a squadron, Captain Mariner, had died from cancer, and they really wanted to do the missing man formation at her funeral. And so they came together from all over the United States, and two of them were Top Guns, and they were saying how much she affected them and how inspired they were. They wouldn't be there without her, etc. And it was absolutely extraordinary. You know, and then the ones who ordinarily did that flyover were really training the women, and absolute perfect timing. And it was so impressive when they were bringing the casket to the cemetery that there these women aviators, all of them women, came up, and then the one broke up and went right straight up in the air. And when I was watching that film, I was thinking about that, because they're the same kind of women. They're so excited, they're passionate, and they really thank the women that came before them. And there is something really special. There's a camaraderie, but also this really almost urgency to share it with young girls that, hey, don't be told you can't do this. You can if you want to do it.
Yeah, it is a unique community in that, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of competition to be the next or be the first or to do better than the last. But in the aviation community, especially among women, there is sort of this, I'm going to pull you up with me, that I don't always want to be the only or the first by myself. And so I'm going to bring you along with me. There's a lot of really wonderful organizations out there, like Women in Aviation International. They are one of those organizations that really seeks out to bring more women alongside of them to help them figure out how they can be involved in aviation and STEM. There's other groups like the 99s that was started by Amelia Earhart. There's a ton of organizations doing really wonderful things to get more girls and women involved in aviation, and in a way that's very purposeful and not feeling threatened or that, you know, oh, well, now you might do something better than me. That's okay. They want that. They want the girls of the future to be doing things better than them and going further and going farther.
And, you know, I'm going to put two bookends on your film, so to speak. And the women we met in that film were just all so great, every one of them. But I'm particularly going to put two big bookends, and they're both right here in Florida. Patty Wagstaff, yes, who is the incredible aerobotics pilot, and she actually has her own flight school and little training center in St. Augustine. But then this amazing, at least when the film was, she was 12, I think, Afton, Kincaid, I think her last name is. Well, she's just the most amazing little thing. There, she's always been fascinated by flying, and so she has all these models and these Legos, and she is just the most amazing little girl. And, you know, you realize that, you know, when I was emailing you, I thought Afton, I think, is going to maybe have the most amazing story of all. And mm-hmm. I think that it was that kind of balance with these older, more experienced pilots, you know, and telling their stories, and so many of them, as I said, were first. But compared her to the aerobics, the aerobatics, I guess they call them, you know, flyer, who was the first and just amazing woman, and still an amazing woman. But it was kind of sad that she's worked a lot with pilots all over the world, particularly in Kenya. Mm-hmm. She's trained them, etc. And invariably, when she comes in, or maybe she's training this guy, and she's on the left and he's on the right, when they come in and they need to refuel, they will ask the guy, how much fuel do you want? And she says, it happens still all the time. But mm-hmm. but there you also have Afton and her incredible enthusiasm. I think that was just a marvelous kind of thread you had throughout the whole movie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, Afton is, she is just an outstanding young woman. I mean, you saw that in the film, and she has known from a very early age that she wanted to be involved in aviation. And her mom and dad are incredible people, and that they weren't involved in aviation at all. And they just said, well, what do we need to do for her? And so they really sought out the right schools, public schools too, the right places for her to go to find out more about aviation. And she just is, I'm going to be really excited to watch what she does with her life. I think no matter what she does, it's going to be incredible, and it's going to leave a wonderful impression on our world.
And again, I'm looking at the time. We have been talking to Katie McIntyre Wyatt, and the film we've been talking about is Fly Like a Girl, and it is so much fun to watch, and you really learn so much. And again, it's going to be through the UN Through Women's Eyes Film Festival, which is going to be part of the Sarasota Film Festival down in Sarasota, and that's it's a special weekend, April 6th and 7th, and through Fly Like a Girl is going to be at 3:30 Saturday, April 6th at the Regal Hollywood 11. Auditorium 3, and then it's going to be repeated part of the overall festival, 4:30 Monday, April 8th, again at the Regal Hollywood, but this time Auditorium 4, and those places might change at the auditoriums. And so Katie McIntyre Wyatt, wonderful film. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's an important film, and I do hope particularly young girls get to see it. They will be inspired. I was inspired, and I don't really want to be a pilot. But anyway, thank you so much for doing it, and I'm going to announce, and I am going to, actually, you're going to be lucky that if you can't make it down next weekend, that actually that film, Fly Like a Girl, is going to be shown in our area in many different places. Fort Myers Film Festival is going to be 6 p.m. Friday, April 12th. And then it's going to be part of the Sunscreen Film Festival here in St. Petersburg, or in St. Petersburg. And that movie is scheduled, I think, for 4:15 Friday, April 26th. And then it also will be June 6th through 9th. There's a Vero Beach Wine and Film Festival. And so you'll have all kinds of chances to see Fly Like a Girl. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater. We're trying to catch up with some of all the events happening. And I'm really excited. I love films, but really it's so much fun, that Fly Like a Girl. And that's really meant to be a compliment. When you see in that film, when she's coming down, and my, she's just just barely above the ground, upside down, and she actually goes through those goalposts to break this ribbon. Wow. I mean, that is some kind of flying. Anyway, okay, and so I was able to catch up with a very, very busy woman, Claire Lessinger, and she is actually the executive director of the final women's NCAA four that's coming to Tampa this next weekend too, April 5th and 7th. And so let's give a listen to Claire, because she's really going to catch us up on all the events you can take in. Well, I am so happy to welcome to the show Claire Lessinger, and she is actually with the organizing committee. She's the executive director for the Women's Final Four Basketball, which is coming to our area. She is also the director of special events for the Tampa Bay Sports Commission. And so, Claire Lessinger, on this very exciting time, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be joining you.
Well, I am so excited. I think that this is the third time we've hosted the Women's Final Four.
And this is the third time in 11 years.
Yeah, and you know, I was so excited in 2008. I was lucky enough to be able to actually talk and have an interview with Pat Summitt.
And oh, how cool.
Oh, it really was. And that was, I think, her last title that she won here. And then in 15, we had Connecticut winning, of course. But this year, I think the quality of the women's field is such that I'm not even sure Connecticut's going to be in the Final Four.
Oh my goodness, I know. The parity is like no other this year. Yeah, and UConn being a two seed in the bracket. You never know, though. You know what they're capable of.
Well, and Claire, you know, you're a longtime sports hero, really, in this area. You were really quite famous for your volleyball that you played in high school. In fact, weren't you the high school athlete of the year in your high school years?
I was, but a long time ago, Mary.
Well, yeah, but your background, you know, and then you went on to star at Florida, and I think they have an annual Defensive Volleyball Player Award in your honor. And then didn't you bring actually the Women's Volleyball Championships here to Tampa?
I was, you know, I served on that local organizing committee in 2009 while I was the head coach at USF. So that was my first opportunity to work with Rob and team here at the Sports Commission and really understand from a local perspective and hosting effort what all goes into that. So that was kind of my first taste of serving on a local organizing committee.
And so, Claire, you would see even just in volleyball how much the sport has changed. And women's basketball, I mean, has really, I mean, I think these are going to be four great teams. And I know with the Connecticut team, high school coaches were always, with their boys teams also, were always saying, watch that University of Connecticut women's team because they really play basketball the way it's meant to be played. And we have seen the evolution of women's sports. And to me, this is such a great opportunity for young women and girls to get out and really get inspired and to think, hey, I want to do that too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's the premier women's championship. So, you know, having this take place in our local community and leveraging that opportunity to really introduce not just the game and the championship to young girls and creating, you know, we've created a lot of legacy and social impact initiatives around this championship specifically that empowers women, that helps create mentoring opportunities for young girls, but also help grow the game. So it's an incredible, you know, as mentioned, platform and opportunity for us here locally to really speak to those efforts.
And in the Tampa Bay Times today, Gino Auriemma was talking about, you know, the upcoming Women's Four, and he was saying how much he loved the Tampa venue and how great they were to the teams and how much he enjoyed it. And he was even hoping that Tampa would be, say, one of four rotating teams like they have for football with college to bowl games. That it could be here regularly. So obviously Gino Auriemma, among many others now, and also Pat Summitt spoke just as highly about how cooperative and how encouraging and, you know, what the events were in Tampa. And I know she was equally really praising the Tampa efforts. And I think that is great. And so, and it's really exciting because you do have so many events for young people. And so tell us what about Tourney Town.
Yeah, sure. You know, the Women's Final Four specifically is just way more than three games. There's so many fun, free, family-friendly events that our community can come out and enjoy and embrace and be a part of, whether they have a ticket to the games or not. And Tourneytown is definitely one of those. It takes place Friday through Sunday at the Tampa Convention Center. It's a fan activation zone. It's, you know, where all of the NCAA corporate partners activate and create really cool, engaging, interactive experiences for the fans and the community alike. They also program it, during its open hours with really cool opportunities, whether it's autograph sessions, youth clinics, you know, Beyond the Baseline, which is a women's empowerment initiative, to the Next Generation Showcase with the NBA Academy. I mean, there's something for everyone at Tourneytown. And then there's a ton of other events taking place outside of Tourneytown, too, with Super Saturday concert presented by AT&T Saturday night at Curtis Hickson Park. That will be a concert as well as fireworks, as well as showcasing the men's semifinal championships, True Celebration Festival Saturday night. And then Sunday we have The Bounce presented by Buick, which is a dribbling event. So picture this, 2,000 kids with 2,000 balls dribbling from Curtis Hickson Park along the Riverwalk to Tourneytown in a parade of sorts, really creating, you know, an epic spectacle celebrating the women's championship.
Well, you know, and I've watched, some of the television events of, you know, the men's NBA All-Star game and all that stuff, and the events they have for kids. So I'm going to go back to the Tourneytown on a Friday. And so you mean you could bring your young daughter or your young son down, and so they would also, there are clinics, you mean, on how to dribble a ball just right or stuff like that. So, and also you can meet, probably ex-players, because I imagine the players right now would be busy practicing and everything. So this is a really, if a little girl doesn't know how to play basketball and is interested, this would be a great place to kind of introduce her to how exciting the game is, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the full schedule for Tourneytown lives on NCAA.com/Women's Final Four. So with some of these events and programs that I've mentioned that are integrated into those 3 days, you can go there and find out when they're taking place. But yes, absolutely. There'll be courts where kids can dribble and shoot, and it be educational to a degree. Then there'll be fun papa shots and, you know, kind of play for or spin to wins. And then there'll be mascot challenges and band and cheer battles and all sorts of fun things.
And then the next day, I think that really sounds outstanding, too, because that is going to, because the games then are going to be, the semifinal games will be at Amalie Arena, and that'll be Friday, April 5th at 7 and 9:30, and then the finals will be Sunday. Is that around 6, the final?
Yes.
Yeah. But Saturday, I think that's really great, too, because it's going to be in beautiful Curtis Hickson Park. But you can watch. In other words, if you think, oh, I want to watch the men's NCAA, semis, you can watch those probably on a big screen, right?
Yeah, you absolutely can. It is truly going to be a celebration of basketball, and that's what that Super Saturday concert will entail. From, you know, and we're getting our talent announcement will be made in the next couple days, but it'll be an incredibly fun, free, family friendly event in the park, which will be capped by fireworks at the end of the night. So yes, your point, and that Super Saturday, it's an umbrella. So it's an umbrella event to Super Saturday because of all that takes place in Tourneytown earlier that day, as mentioned, the autograph sessions, and those will be the two finalist teams that will be in Tourneytown signing autographs.
Oh, wow.
To the NBA Academy Next Generation Showcase, which is new, to the Women's Final Four programming this year. So a lot of really cool things happening, and the youth clinics are that morning as well.
And again, we're talking to Claire Lessinger, and as you can tell, she is actually executive director of the Women's Final Four, but she's also with the Tampa Bay Sports Authority Commission, special events director. That also, I know we already announced it on an earlier show, that do you still need volunteers, and what would that entail?
We do, and it is the best way to join our team and really, you know, get an understanding of what all goes into hosting these events. Our volunteers are the lifeblood to the success of these major events. And to register, you would just go to WFFTampaBay.com. There's a tab there for volunteers. You can click to register. We still have a handful of shifts to fill. And so highly encouraging our community to come out and support the event in that way, shape, and form as well. It's really fun. Volunteers, you know, will clearly get some free swag that go along with that opportunity, as well as a football ticket to one of the USF games next year.
Oh,
so
wow.
Some incentives there are attached for our volunteer call and outreach, but our volunteers are fabulous. They really help us roll out the red carpet and create that warm welcome that is allowing us to get these events back. They play a really large, they're a key ingredient in that success factor.
And I know we had some inquiries, and just give us a rough idea what the volunteers would be doing.
So it's a wide range, and when you actually go on to register, you can select, you know, kind of a shift of your choice in terms of location. But Tourneytown has a significant amount of spots still to fill, so that's a bit of a more active role, as you'll be working in some of those fan activation areas. But everything from hotel greeters to airport greeters to command center volunteers, there is something for everyone, depending on what they're interested in doing and how they'd like to help serve in that capacity.
And, you know, I noticed in the article today, too, and we don't mention his prices, but are there still tickets available? And at least what I saw, they look quite reasonable.
Yes, you know what? There are very few tickets still available, so our ticket sales have been phenomenal. And you can go to ncaa.com/Women's Final Four to purchase, and I believe, you know, there are reasonable tickets left, absolutely, and a lot of those is because they're the uppers left in the arena, but we are tracking for a sellout and are super excited about that.
Well, I am too, and I know the whole Tampa Bay region is, and so Claire Lessinger, we've gone through this pretty quickly. Is there anything we didn't mention that you want to mention?
I don't think so. I think we covered it. But in closing, I would just say, just a reminder, there is something for everyone, and to encourage the community to come out and experience the Women's Final Four in some way, shape, or form, whether it's getting tickets to the game or enjoying the free fan-friendly events or volunteering.
And thanks so much, Claire. I know how busy you are for giving us this time.
Indeed. They are really... I'm sorry to the woman I was contacting with, and she was going to two meetings. She was answering like three phone calls, walking her dog, and lining me up with some people. So anyway, but it's a very busy time, and it's an exciting time. And so any final announcements or anything, Arlene, you want to make?
A number of calls about these events, and I have posted information on our Facebook page. Also, Mary, could you give information on the music that you played right after?
R.B. Juicy. You can. I found it actually on YouTube, and so I don't know if you can find it any other place. Just a sec. And it's. Wait a minute. I've got it again. I made notes. Just here we are. And it's by Kelly Cosby, C-O-S-B-Y, K-E-L-L-Y, Kelly Cosby, and Beth Gavin, G-A-V-I-N. And you can get a copy of the lyrics, but I think it's absolutely great fun. And I just enjoy it. And they really pretty much covered her career. And so you can get a quick synopsis of Notorious R.B.G.
And coming up at noon on our... Coming up at 3:30, Sean will bring you a preview of this weekend's Tampa Pride on the 3:30 news.
I'm telling you, there are so many things happening right now. You just really have to take your vitamins and try and get in as much as you can. And I'm looking at the time, and you have been listening to WMNF 88, WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. And just hang in there, people. It's exciting times. And I'm going to go out with this Fly by Nicki Minaj.
To fight, to conquer, to thrive, I came to